Welcome to Voices from Asia, a four-part podcast series by the National University of Singapore. This series aims to shed light on key issues that are expected to be discussed at the COP28 Climate Change Conference in Dubai this December, and what they mean for people in Asia. My name is Audrey Tan, and I am the Science Communications Lead at the NUS Center for Nature-Based Climate Solutions. In this episode, I will be speaking with Dr. Aisha Al-Sarihi, a research fellow at the NUS Middle East Institute, on two key topics we can expect to hear more of at COP28. How fast should fossil fuel use decline, and the role of carbon markets in the interim? Thanks for joining us, Aisha.
Thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So Aisha, COP28 is just about a month away, and there have been many reports and discussions about the climate change conference of the year. Not all of them have been very encouraging or positive. And among the strict criticisms that we have seen is that because COP28 is taking place in an oil and gas-rich country with an interest in keeping fossil fuels flowing, ambitions could be watered down. So what do you think of these concerns, and are they justified?
Well, thank you very much for this question. I think these concerns to an extent are valid, and there are many reasons why these concerns are here. The first reason, as you mentioned, many reports have been released to measure whether we are on track on keeping 1.5 degrees Celsius within reach, and these reports are coming with worrying findings. The most recent report is the UNFCCC synthesis report on the technical dialogue of the first global stocktake, which was released last month in September ahead of COP28. So the report suggests that if we don't accelerate our current climate pledges, Paris goals of keeping global temperature below 2 degrees Celsius will not be within reach. The second reason, and giving the alarming finding from these reports, the host of the UAE of COP28 in Dubai will be critical COP for course correction to keep Paris Agreement goals within reach. That is because COP28 in Dubai will be the first COP ever to take stock on the global stocktake. The third point also that I would like to add on whether the UAE, being a major producer of hydrocarbons, and the choice of Sultan Ahmed Al-Jaber as a COP28 president designate, who is also the COO of the state-owned Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, ADNOC. The doubt is whether the UAE can act as impartial host. So, as we know, the latest synthesis report explicitly mentioned that phasing out unabated fossil fuels is very critical for us to correct course in charting our path that keeps the 1.5 rise in temperature within reach. This will require achieving this kind of, you know, goal will require a strong COP leadership to push countries on ratcheting it up, their political responses to climate action. So that said, on the sideline of the UN climate talks in Bonn, Dr. Al-Jaber said the phase down of fossil fuels is inevitable, emphasizing phasing down, not phasing out fossil fuels.
Yes, his comments drew a lot of criticism at that point, I remember.
Yes, indeed. What is so important, actually, to remember is that also Dr. Sultan Al-Jaber, he is the chairman of the Clean Energy Producer, or so-called Masdar, which is one of the biggest investors in renewable energy, both in the UAE and internationally. Therefore, Dr. Al-Jaber has dual credentials, both on the oil and renewable energy industry. And this mix of credential might be the right mix for engaging stakeholders from both industries to discuss best solutions for a stronger climate action.
So thanks, Aisha, for that background. But let's take a step back here. Climate change impacts are ravaging the world, and the Middle East is also not exempt. So what do you think accounts for some of the hesitancy we are seeing at the speed of change needed? As you mentioned, when COP28 President Sultan Al-Jaber talked about fossil fuel use, he used the term face down instead of face out. And that's something that many people were quick to notice.
Indeed. So the Middle East is dealing with a complex trade-off when it comes to the climate change. The Middle East producers depend heavily on the oil and gas export revenues to sustain the economic growth. And at the same time, the hydrocarbons and the revenues that comes from the export of the hydrocarbons are means for those countries also to weather the impacts of the climate change. For instance, as we mentioned, water desalination is one of the solutions to tackle water scarcity in the region. And the water desalination is an energy-intensive industry which currently heavily depend on the oil and gas for its operation. Desalination technology is also an imported technology, which the revenues from the oil are like the means to import these technologies. Also, without the oil and gas revenues, countries in the regions will also struggle to secure food. Because food is largely imported in the region. But for the Middle East producers, they are currently aware of the need to decarbonize. For the Middle East, decarbonization is a measure to hedge against the potential risks posed by the global energy transition. So countries in the region are now investing in hydrogen, in renewable energy, carbon capture and storage, as well as electric vehicles, as an example. And many countries in the region also realize the importance of economic diversification and developing alternative sources of income away from, you know, the oil and gas. However, one of the dilemmas the Middle East countries face today is the need for oil revenues to fund these social, economic, as well as the decarbonization project. So the looming peak of oil demand resulting from advanced climate mitigation measures and the vulnerability to the oil prices fluctuation is of a particular concern for the Middle East producers, because transitioning away from fossil fuels will limit the bandwidth for economic diversification, as well as for the country's ability to adapt and recover from the impacts of the climate change. These are what I have mentioned are actually the main reasons why we see hesitancy in climate action in the region, because climate actions come at cost. It comes at the cost of the main source of income.
So Aisha, maybe tell us a bit more about how these oil producing regions are looking to buy time as they try to diversify their income sources. We have seen a lot of efforts by the Middle East to bring in tourists. Their airlines, Emirates and Qatar, are top-notch, giving Singapore Airlines a run for its money. And we're also seeing them hosting world-class events like the World Cup. The construction sector is also booming as they look to build bigger and better. Will this be enough? And what other sectors do you think they are looking to expand?
Indeed, for the Middle East, with the economic vulnerability to the oil prices and with looming peak oil demand, oil producers are in race to buy time, as you rightly pointed out, to use the oil revenues as much as possible so they can prepare for a post-oil future. Yes, as you mentioned, competitive airlines, along with ports, logistics, attracting tourism, developing space industry, and also investing in sporting industry, entertainment sectors, also developing mega projects such as, you know, NEOM, which is a big project in Saudi Arabia. These are some of the sectors that the countries in the region are looking at to diversify the economy. Also, developing alternative energy resources like renewables, hydrogen. These also are part of the economic diversification plans. as well as, you know, this will not happen, of course, without the social transformations and the empowerment of youth and women in the region, especially that big chunk in the society are youth. So also the empowerment of youth and women are part of the economic diversification plans across countries in the region. These are, you know, pillars that are included in, for example, Saudi Vision 2030, Oman Vision 2040, as well as UAE Vision 2071. So the Middle East producers really face a conundrum. They need oil money to diversify the economy, face climate challenges, and have limited options to diversify. And all countries are exploring, you know, different strategies to cope with this dilemma. The UAE, for example, wants to hay while the sun shines and sell as much oil within the next few years as possible, while Saudi Arabia wants to drag out the oil era for as long as possible to give it time to implement the reforms. And climate change, of course, is only going to limit the scope for these countries to diversify their economies and sustain economic growth in the post-oil future. Also in terms, for example, promoting for tourism, Saudi Arabia most recently updated its tourism target and wants to attract 70 million visitors by 2030. The moment is nowhere near that target. The UAE aiming also for 40 million hotel guests is also not faring much better. So, paradoxically, climate change may just make these destinations even less attractive.
So, what tools are available then for countries to cut their emissions, especially countries in the Middle East? For us here in Asia, we have seen a lot of policy and financial tools like carbon taxes, stricter bank lending schemes to make renewable energy plants more attractive. And also in Asia, there's many opportunities to harness nature-based solutions like forests and mangroves that naturally help take in carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. But in the Middle East and countries like the UAE, which derives much of their income, as you've said, from the extraction and use of fossil fuels, what tools do they have?
Yes, so unlike countries in the Asia-Pacific, the Middle East countries have limited nature-based solutions as well as limited options for the decarbonization, because the Middle East countries depend heavily on importing the technology. So most of the decarbonization efforts today supported by scaling up the deployment of, for example, renewable energy, carbon capture and storage, energy efficiency and hydrogen. All these are not locally available or produced and imported from abroad. And that is because also the R&D expenditure in the region is very limited. But despite these also, you know, ongoing efforts to adopt the decarbonization projects and technologies, the Middle East countries are unlikely also to speed up the transition, because they will need also to navigate other challenges apart from the technology. There are some technical, political, institutional, as well as financial challenges that are needed to be addressed for the countries to make their transition or make their decarbonization efforts materialize into reality. So in this context, the Middle East countries need to simultaneously navigate other solutions that, you know, help them in cleaning up the oil and gas industry. And one of the solutions is offsetting the carbon emissions from the current fossil fuel industry while they are making their way to transition away from the carbon economy. And for that reason, the governments and non-state actors in the Middle East are aware of the importance of carbon offsetting as an alternative tool So the Middle East, for example, the Middle East Green Initiative is one of the initiatives have been, you know, launched by Saudi Arabia back in 2021. And this initiative aims to plant 10 billion trees across the region. This is an inspirational project, I would say. However, we, you know, should be cautious about this project because plantation would require water resources, and we are dealing with a region that grapples with the water scarcity issue. But we are also seeing other initiatives when it comes to the carbon offsetting. Saudi Arabia, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, announced a regional voluntary carbon market company last year. And this company aims to launch the exchange next year in 2024. Also last year, Abu Dhabi launched a regulated carbon credit trading exchange and clearing house as a platform also to trade and finance carbon credits. So in this context, and given the potential offered by the Asia-Pacific countries, which are rich in the forest carbon reservoir and rich in biodiversity, I think there is a potential for cooperation between the Middle East and Asia-Pacific on carbon trading, to explore carbon trading mechanism and the exchange of CO2 sinks between the Middle East and the Asia-Pacific country, especially in Southeast Asian countries. And this cooperative approach will have mutual benefits for both regions that both aspire to achieve net zero goals by mid-century.
Thanks, Aisha. So what do you think this means for the rest of the world since the UAE is presiding over this year's climate change conference? Do you think we can expect concerns over their own national circumstances to affect the global outcome?
Yeah, the role of the UAE as a host of COP28 is going to be critical because there is a need to phase out an abated use of the fossil fuels. And this has been central to the key findings of the Global Stocktake Synthesis Report, which was released last month by the UNFCCC. Stating that phasing out fossil fuels is the way if we want to correct course and keep Paris Agreement goal of 1.5 degrees Celsius within reach. So the language of phasing out fossil fuels was first debated at COP26, and it is going to be or likely to dominate the climate discussions during this year host of COP28. However, as during Egypt's host of COP27, the call for a phase out of fossil fuels are likely to be rejected. The UAE, considered part of the global south, the least contributor to climate change, but the most vulnerable to its impact, is likely to reflect on the special needs for climate mitigation and adaptation of the global south, highlighting on limited access to finance, technology, human capacity that are needed to handle the transformation and the shift to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Therefore, I expect that instead a just energy transition that ensures providing targeted support for the poor and the most vulnerable, I think this will gain more weight during COP28 discussion than phasing out fossil fuels. And I expect that the final text might still maintain the same language of phasing down fossil fuels, but not phasing out fossil fuels, to be the same as previous COPs.
But last year, COP27 was held in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, which is also a developing country. So do you expect the tone to change this year?
So for Egypt, as an African and developing country host, Egypt's COP last year campaigned to represent the needs of developing countries, especially the human and financial capacities needed to support countries' adaptation and recovery from the loss and damage presented by climate disaster. So the major success of COP27 which was held in Sharm el-Sheikh, and also, as we mentioned, as a developing country, was the establishment of the Loss and Damage Fund. So that was the legacy of COP27. Now, this year, also the UAE would want to leave a legacy as it concludes, the COP28 session this year. So the UAE, again, it falls under the category of the Global South, but the UAE itself is not considered a developing country. So what I expect, or at least this is my hope, that the UAE will play somehow similar a role to the COP27 and will push for the climate finance and will try to bridge between the Global South and Global North, realizing the target of $100 billion annually from developed to developing countries will be the tone and the legacy of this year COP. And on that front, already the UAE has mobilized around $450 million US dollar to buy carbon credits from the African Carbon Market Initiative. And this is promising. So the UAE can present an example for the others to follow.
Thank you so much, Aisha, for your time in providing nuance to the discussions on an oil-rich region hosting the climate change conference this year. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today, but we appreciate your time, Aisha.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was an insightful discussion.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Voices from Asia. Stay tuned for subsequent episodes where we highlight more issues from COP28, what they are, how they work, and why they matter for Asia.